If you want to 10x your growth or your personal development, like, be willing to hear the truth and not take it personal, which is easier said than done.
I got to go make money. I got to go work. I got to do these things, and not realizing that, man, you can do all those things, but if your life falls apart, then what good does any of it do?
What's your passion? What are you most passionate about and good at? You can't be, you know, you have to find the balance there. And then what does the world need?
Yeah.
At that intersection is your purpose. How do you approach, like, wealth management and build? Well,
don't forget that you said it builds freedom. Sometimes it builds bondage. Laying on your deathbed with your children sitting at your side saying, man, dad, I love you so much. You were a great dad. Your wife standing beside you going, I could have never asked for a better husband. Your friends, a whole heap of friends standing around you saying, man, you've impacted my life so much.
If you can bottle up what I feel throughout the week in community with who I have in my life and sell it, It would go crazy. You'd be a billionaire. What are you learning in life right now? Like, what's the lesson you think you're learning the most right now?
What am I learning? What lesson am I learning in life? That's a great question. I'm going to say right now, I am learning more and more that to live is actually to not live for yourself. The more I focus on myself, actually, the more, actually discontent I get a lot of times, because the more I focus on myself, then either I'm now, in comparison mode, and comparison is like the worst thing for joy, because either you are comparing yourself in a superior way, right, to other people, which then now, obviously downgrades someone else. Or you're comparing yourself in an inferior way, which then saps all of your joy. And so I think the biggest thing that I am learning and I'm attempting to live on is that life is not truly about centered around Brian, that's for sure.
Which Brian, you or me?
It's always centered around you,
Brian. Yes, that's fair. No, we just jumped right into it. I love that answer. I think that probably that plays a role, a significant role, when I want to talk about, I think, the benefits of being off social media for you. Like, you've been off social media as long as I've known you, and I've been on social media forever. And I think there's something to be said for that healthy, like, disconnection. So we can get into that for sure. I want to talk a lot of business with you, like, pick your mind on stuff, especially me as 32-year-old husband, father. Like, I want to be excellent with my time, my energy. But I want to also do it in the right way. Like, I'm not interested in just making more money or building these crazy businesses at the expense of what matters most.
Yeah.
So for you, man, you're a dad, you're a husband, you're a busy, busy man. Like, what's your favorite part about this season of life as a dad for you?
Oh, man. They're so moldable and pliable, which is also scary at the same time, because I am the one doing a lot of the molding and plying and pushing and pulling. And so that's super fun. It is that we do know that it comes with a lot of responsibility. It's a little scary at times, because I want to make sure I'm molding them into, you know, what God wants me to mold them into. And so much of our life, all of our lives, revolves around performance-based molding. And my kids are in sports and they're trying to be high achieving kids and things like that. And I have to be super careful that I don't become the high achieving dad that performance is the only thing that matters, but position as a child of mine, that they're loved and cared for. And I don't really care in the end what the end result is, as long as, you know, for one, that they're using their talents and abilities to glorify God, and that, that's the most important thing.
That'll preach, dude. That's, I think we see very much eye to eye on that, where we're not discrediting performance and this pursuit of excellence, because, dude, your kids are phenomenal at golf. They're phenomenal with whatever they're doing. They have fun. But at the same time, it's not like this achieving at all costs to a fault, because I think that's where we can slide into if we're not careful as well. And so I take from, like, two men who I look up to and I hold in high regard, extremely high, is you and Urban. And I think, at least in my opinion, for you guys to, like, have the mentalities come together, it'd be like the best case scenario. Or, you know, you're probably the hybrid between me and Urban. So I'm trying to, you know, learn, and that's why I love picking your brain and like hanging out with you. I mean, we go back years now, which is crazy. Yeah. Matter of fact, that's a good place to kind of start too, is, you know, when we first met, we, you know, I had moved into Urbans with Gigi, mm-hmm. and you were the catty corner, weird neighbor. And we were like, everyone was like, stay away from that guy. But no, we met, we hung out, similar interests, baseball guys and guys who definitely want to stay in shape as long as possible. So we started playing a lot of tennis and pickleball. Mm-hmm. But most importantly, more important than that, is our similar interests with faith, family, mm-hmm. and community.
Yeah.
So COVID hit, and you remember mm-hmm. you opened your house to Gigi and I. Mm-hmm. And that was before we had kids, and we're learning like how to be parents and the crazy chaos. Like, you have the preacher on the screen and you have kids just running and jumping over the couches. So you guys handle the chaos really well. But what's that like to you in terms of community, like relationships? Like, what does that look like for you right now in this season, and how important are relationships?
Well, I think the cool part was back then that, you know, I didn't even know Urban at the time. Yeah. I had people tell, well, you're going to be neighbors with Urban Meyer. I was like, I don't think Urban lives here, but okay, sure, yeah. You know? And so next thing I know, you're the one living in his house. And it was such a great opportunity. I mean, the Lord has used it in so many ways in my life. You've blessed my life in so many ways. And just looking back on those times, I knew you'd be a great dad. I knew you guys would be great parents. Mm. I knew you'd thrive in that environment because, dude, they would have rather hung out with you than me. That's for sure. Our kids are all over you. And, you know, we're trying to watch church online or something, and, you know, you're body slamming them and chucking them on the couch.
Chucking them across the room, dude.
And that's what community is to me. You know, I want other guys, especially since I have boys, pouring into my boys as much, if not more, than I am. Mm. Because it's one thing to hear things from your dad. It's one thing to see your dad live his life. And a lot of boys certainly look up to their dads a lot. But there's something totally different when they can see other men doing things similarly and hearing the same message in a lot of ways, but from a different voice.
Yes.
And so, you know, we were gone this past week, my wife and I, and my oldest one. We wanted to spend some one-on-one time with our oldest one. And we have three boys. 12, 9, and 5. And so we don't get a lot of individual time. So we're trying to make that a priority to try and do things individually with them.
I love that.
So when we left our other two behind, you know, one day they went over to one of our other buddies' house, Josh and Allie and them. And it was like, he's their dad for the day, you know, and they hear a different voice. Mm. But I know what the message is coming from that voice, mm-hmm. but they're hearing it from a different voice. And he's willing and able to speak in and say, hey, dude, that's not how you act, you know, or something like that. Yeah. Or, hey, great job. I mean, which he encourages the heck out of them too in their golf, and like so many of my guys do. And so I think that's the beauty of community, man, is that it's not just one voice. It's a lot of voices with different perspectives and with different abilities. Like, I have other buddies like Alex and those guys, like, you know, we go to their house and he's teaching them to shoot a bow and arrow and do these things that I don't have a clue about.
Yeah, he's teaching them how to actually be manly.
Exactly. They're like, this is a hammer. I'm like, oh, sweet. Looks cool, you know?
If I have a boy ever, I need, I'm in the same boat, buddy. Exactly. Trust me.
So I think that's the beauty of it, right? Is that we want our children to have lots of different experiences and grow, but most importantly, be well-rounded, and that's one of the best ways to do that, I believe.
Yeah, dude, so good. I definitely want to bookmark the idea of like raising kids and how to do that in the right way, and kind of find that balance of what we talked about on a practical level. Like, how can I get better at like raising my girls? And that is different than raising boys. Yeah. Like, there's a difference for sure, but there are some overlaps. But you mentioned like Josh, you mentioned Alex. Jason Riley is the brother as well. He's actually going to stop by later this week, I think. Sweet. So two of my favorites, just getting to spend more time with you, quite honestly. And I get to document it, which is incredible to look back on and hear. But yeah, you mentioned like those guys. Was there, take us back to like, okay, Brian, before you really got plugged into those guys, were you kind of island, like isolated? And what was that like? And was there a point in time you're like, yo, I need to be proactive about this? Or did it just naturally happen, that close-knit guys?
So when I was playing baseball, you know, for 14, 15, 16 years professionally, you feel somewhat isolated, minus the fact that we used to always joke that when the season was over, you finally got to choose your friends, you know? And don't get me wrong, I loved being around the guys. And we had a common bond when it came to baseball, right? But you didn't always have common bonds outside of the field. Sometimes you had some, but In the off season, in some ways, I hate to even say this, but at times it was hard to know what people wanted a relationship with you for sometimes, right? If you're in somewhat of a high profile situation, you become a little bit guarded. You become a little bit jaded even maybe to the outside world of baseball. And so I'd say that in a lot of ways we did live somewhat isolated, especially in off seasons and things like that. And then when I had some injuries towards the end of my career, specifically my second concussion when I was missed about a year and I was in some really, really dark, deep places, I didn't have much, didn't have many people, not within reach, like maybe
a
phone
call.
You
were in Baltimore?
I was actually in Florida rehabbing. They sent me to get away from the team because I couldn't be around that environment. I couldn't be in the stadiums and those sorts of things because it would just wreck me. And so I was down here actually and didn't have really anybody. And that was brutal. And so when I retired in 14, I felt like I can't live like that. Like I know that's not how God intended us to live. I kind of sought out as a couple guys, didn't even really know them very well. Jason and I, by happenstance, ended up playing golf together. I did not know Jason while I was playing.
Yeah, that's wild.
And yeah, Derek Jeter actually introduced us playing golf one day. And he became part of my little small group that we were doing some Bible studies. And it was just two other guys at the time. And so it was four of us. We started meeting and, you know, we're now, whatever, 10 years later. And
that's wild.
And, you know, I think Jason would say the same thing. It has changed my life more than anything in the world has ever changed my life, is living in community with other people and other guys. When you live in isolation, you can easily go to places mentally that you should never go. Things become bigger than maybe they really even are at times. We even had a conversation a little bit about that before we started here today. Yeah. Jason has been through some of those times, and many of us in this period of 10 years. I realized that that's the only way to live.
Yeah, connected.
Yeah.
So Jason was the first kind of contact, kind of fell in your lap, and then that plugged you in, or that kind of got the wheels turning. You were doing Bible study, and that kind of grew and manifested into this. I'm making sure my mic, by the way, Josh, making sure these volume things are turned up. Hey, real quick, I wanted to share with you the first official sponsor for the Live Elevated podcast is no other than Built Basics, what I'm rocking with my shirt and my hat. Built has been a staple of mine to and from the gym, whether it's a tank top or a shirt or shorts or a hat or even their jackets. And right now for this podcast, you can use code ELEVATED at checkout for 20% off. It helps me and supports the podcast so we can grow this thing. So don't hesitate. If you're looking to elevate your wardrobe, get some new gym gear, or have a really great selection of basic clothes for date nights and whatnot, use code ELEVATED at checkout. You'll get 20% off. All right. With that said, thanks for watching. Let's get back to the video.
We're living and learning. You know? We're living and learning.
That's life, isn't it?
That's it. Yeah. I'm at a point where at this point in my life, I'm willing to ask for help.
Amen.
I'm willing to change my mind. There are so many things that I don't even agree with that I thought was absolute like reality. 5 years ago, 2 years ago, 6 months ago, like there are certain things. So I think those two things are something that are top of mind for me. Willing to ask for help, willing to change my mind.
Big
I don't know it all and I can't do it on my own.
Huge. Dude, if I would have learned that at 25, I'd have been golden.
Same.
You know?
Same. How old are you, by the way? You're 60?
Almost 60. Almost 60.
No, man, dude,
I can always hold you up, you know, to keep me humble.
For sure, bro. Yeah, I remember, I mean, dude, yeah, you, I'm trying to think back to when I was still working for Pfizer. I used this man's, you know, his office. You're kind of like, what would we call that?
Guest
like
house.
A guest house, mother-in-law suite as an office.
Yeah.
So you've been so generous to me, but yeah, the part I love most about hanging out with you and spending time with you is you're real, dude. Like you've been through, you've had immense success. You pursued excellence in your craft and you made a lot of money. You're retired. You don't have to worry about certain things, which I'd love to pick your brain on. That comes
about
with
that, but
I'm sure it comes with other worries, but yeah, you're just the homie. Like you're always telling me the truth in love, but you're also like not super serious all the time. Like you're willing to, you know, bust each other's balls and have fun. Like I love that.
I don't think you can ever take life too seriously. I mean, you know, I would say the one thing that is something that I would learned a long time ago is that, man, the more serious you take yourself, like, everything becomes a big deal, you know? And I love what you said about willing to change your mind, not know, asking for help is enormous, because when we think we have it all figured out, or when our mind is so shut off or closed off to the other side of something, then that's when I think we see a lot of what we see nowadays of just like people unwilling to just have conversations and be open to hearing what the other side has to say, whether it's your wife, whether it's your child, whether it's a friend, whether it's, doesn't even matter who or how big of the topic subject is.
So true. Yeah. I mean, that's a life lesson for, that's a life lesson, but also relational too. Cause I remember Gigi wouldn't even tell me the truth at one point. She'd be like, you just take everything personal. I can't tell you the truth because you get defensive. And I'm like, dang. So really detaching from taking things personally is, it opens you up to actually growing for real. Because if I hide and like protect myself, I'm in self-preservation mode and I'm defensive and taking things personally and seriously, my wife, the person who's closest to me, who knows me better than anyone else, is not going to tell me the truth that I need to hear. So if you want to 10x your growth or your personal development, like be willing to hear the truth and not take it personal, which is easier said than done.
That's a hard one. It really is. But it's so true. And I have those conversations. I had this conversation with somebody the other day that I said, hey, you have to hold me accountable to this part of my life because I know this is my tendency. And I think all of our gifts can also be our greatest curses, you know? And so we have to use the gifts God has given us. So mine is to be like, I told him this, and it kind of got brought to my attention. It became very apparent through some people, but that I like to play almost devil's advocate or be like, I'm very much a realist, if that, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. So if somebody's dreaming, I'm always usually like the, well, yeah, but how's that going
to
play out?
Yeah, come back to earth. Yeah. You know, get your feet on the ground.
Those sorts of things, which I think are okay.
Yeah.
But when they become like you feel like your side is the right side all the time, then that's when it becomes your greatest curse, right? And it can come across as very arrogant, or it can come across as it's not encouraging to someone else either at times. And so having people to hold you accountable, even in your strengths and weaknesses, is one of the things that living with in community and with other people is huge for.
Huge.
Yeah.
All right. That's amazing. So strengths. I love the idea of maximizing on your strengths. And, you know, I just feel like he's given us all strengths, at least one where we can like really tap into it. If we did, we would make a lot more impact. We would be a lot more of a powerful force for good in the world. So like, yeah, what do you think your strengths are? Like in this season of life after baseball, that was obviously a pretty decent strength. Was
Man, that's a great question. It's hard to talk about your own strengths, you know.
Humility is the number one strength.
Yes, I love that one.
Guys, I'm just humble.
Honestly,
what if you said that?
Humility is probably my greatest strength. I know some people that might say that.
Guys, I'm just humble.
So humble.
You will not believe that.
I don't know. I think.
I know it's not text messaging because I'm the same.
Communication, not my
you and
strong
me both. Buddy.
No, not my strong suit, bro.
But we're present in person, though.
We are present in person, and I generally have to preface to my friends. I'm like, dude, please don't take it personally. It's not a personal thing. Like, you are not the only one I do this to. Mm-hmm. I can assure you. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't love that aspect. I don't love having a phone all the time. Yeah. I'm terrible with that. But strengths, I would say, generally speaking, I feel like I get along with people relatively easily. I don't have trouble like in environments where even if it's people you're not fully aligned with or on the same page and everything, like it doesn't bother me, you know? So I guess unifier in some ways.
Whether it's peacemaker,
that would definitely be, if I was to take a quality, like personality test, peacemaker would be pretty high on there, generally speaking.
That's good.
My wife would probably say too much of a peacemaker sometimes.
Yeah.
She actually taught me about boundaries. Like, so like there's this, you know what I'm saying? Like what I at one point thought was her closing people off quickly or shut it was like she taught me healthy boundaries in some ways too, you know? And so, cause I would tend to go on the side of like, I'll just, she'd be like, you trust everybody.
Say
you
yes let to
anybody
everything.
Walk all over you. It doesn't yep. matter. Like, you know, and so that's the beauty of just being around other people and
yep.
being open to hearing, hey, okay, tell me, explain, like, where do you see that in my life that yep. maybe Peacemaker is a good thing, but it also can be not always the best yeah. thing. Because yeah. it can actually open you up to allowing other people in your life to get hurt or things like that.
Healthy boundaries is huge.
Yeah.
Did your wife give you that advice unelicited, or did you ask her?
No, I think honestly, it wasn't even necessarily like a specific moment.
Yeah.
You know, it was an overtime thing that we, and now, thank goodness, we are now 16 years into our marriage, that we both see those as strengths in our marriage. Like,
that's great.
She sees it as a strength for our marriage that I can keep her in line with, hey, like, you got to have grace and you got to do these things. And then I can see it in line with, okay, I get, like, you know, I can't just trust everything.
Yeah.
You know, you have to at least be aware and cognizant of certain things that, that are the reality that's going on and maybe set some boundaries here and there and that sort of stuff. So we see them as strengths now. That wasn't always the case, right? Sometimes those things can lead to some butting heads at some point. And and those, I think we've all been through those sorts of things in relationships and marriage and everything else where you have to work through those things.
What did Jesus say? He said, be gentle as doves and wise as serpents, something like that, where it's like the balance of having just pure love in your heart, but also not just like being stupid.
Yep.
Like just straight up, which I think that's a good message for you and me. For sure. Cause I mean, healthy boundaries is everything. And speaking of that, it's like with time management, and I'd love to get into like your mind when it comes to business, stewarding your wealth, your God given, you know, wealth in this lifetime, what that looks like. But when it comes to time, I mean, one of the things we talk about all the time in this group is it's been said that time is your most valuable.
Yeah.
Possession, which it is, but more importantly is the presence in which you actually give that time, right? And that makes sense to me, because if you're not present, you can have all the time in the world, but you're wasting it. You're missing the moment. You're not living in the present. So presence is everything. So how do you decide what gets your presence? How do you decide what gets your time and attention in this season of life?
That's a great question. And I think you honestly, it's one of those things you have to sit down and actually evaluate.
Yeah.
Because if you just wing it, then a lot of times you look back and you're like, I gave my time to things that weren't super valuable.
Yeah.
We've all been there.
100%.
Absolutely. And so, you know, in fact, as you say, we'll get into, but like even charity work and things like that, like we had to narrow some things down, because it's like, you could give a little bit of time to 20 places and make zero impact, or you can give quite a bit of time to 5 places and make much larger impact.
That's right.
Same with finances or those sorts of things. And so at this stage of life, for me, like, you know, God is where my first fruits of my time will go. So like, I want to make sure that in the morning, like, I have my space, my time. I want to get up early enough to spend time and make sure that my heart is in the right place for that day, and understanding, you know, my creator, my maker. And then from there, it's going to go to my family generally first. From there, it's going to go to my community of guys. So like this morning, you know, I met with 5 guys for breakfast that are in my small group of guys and are committed to getting together and trying to live in community. A lot of them have never done that before. Mm-hmm. And they're seeing the value of it. They're seeing the value of real conversations and, you know, being able to lay out, man, this is where I'm struggling. How do I get better at this?
Being seen, being heard.
Exactly.
Isn't that crazy how that's a foreign like experience for men, at least in America? I'm sure it's global, but that's no doubt connected to like what we see in the world, like the violence or the anger play out, like all that stuff is like, man, we just need to get around more tables, break some bread and talk about real stuff as men.
I would say, and maybe this is a generalization based on what I saw growing up, but I don't think as nearly as much 40 years ago that guys were getting together in that way. I mean, I know based on what I saw growing up, it was mostly work, right? My dad worked a lot, which I'm grateful for. He put food on the table. He was working his tail off and doing what he felt like he needed to do. And he didn't spend his free time doing silly stuff. Like, yeah. He was with his family. But I also think that was a detriment in some ways that he didn't carve out much time for other relationships with guys. Like, you know, real solid relationships that I think he's doing that more now at 75 than he did at 25. And a lot of times I think when we're young, we think, oh, I just got to put my nose to the grindstone and like, I'll figure the rest out later. But I just got to go make money. I got to go work. I got to do these things. And not realizing that, man, you can do all those things, but if your life falls apart, then what good does any of it do, right? And so a lot of times men also have revolved that community or that time with people around hobbies or interests or playing golf. And I do that too. But I realize what a lot of times when you do those things, there's not real conversation.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so... those things have been huge to me. I value them greatly. And I think the people that I've been involved with in those value them greatly. And so I put my time into that. And then, you know, we do put our time into, some charity work, certainly into what we are passionate about.
Yeah.
I think that that's a big one that we'll talk about probably even more with business and things like that. But I think you take your passions. I think God wants to use you in your passions. You know, I don't think he's created us to go and have to be used in things that we don't like at all.
Or we're just getting dragged, like, oh, yeah, I guess I have to do
this. Through the deep mud waters. Right. Now, not to say that there aren't things that we have to do in life that we don't necessarily feel like we're thriving all the time. But I do think that that is where I look. I'm like, okay, where is God moving in ways that I feel passionate about? And just let me just join up there.
Yeah.
You know,
let's go. That's fire. Like that's a reoccurring theme that it's all about where is God moving and choosing to participate.
Mm-hmm.
Cause like God's moving regardless. You get to either play ball or not, you know, you get to either get in the flow of that or sit back and you miss out on the thrill and like the experience because of wanting to sit back. So like finding that I think is really, really cool. I also love the idea, which you touched on, is like God-given passions and interests and strengths. It's like, that's not on accident. And I think at least, you know, growing up in church, sometimes the belief could be like, well, not all of your passions or desires are like from God and like fair. But like, if you're super passionate about like fitness or racing or trying to see what your body's capable of, there's Olympic runners, some guy quoted where it's like, I feel God moving most powerfully through me as I'm sprinting for the gold medal.
Sure.
You know, and that can be like a testimony to his faith.
If, I mean, if that was the case, my whole career would have been a waste.
Right.
If it was like, if it meant nothing to God to use the abilities that he'd given me, you know, like, so I think the Lord can use you in your passions and your gifting all the time. For
totally.
Sure.
And something Josh and I talk about a lot, absolutely, is it's a quote. We didn't come up with it. We're smart, but not that smart.
You can always plagiarize it, though.
Yeah, yeah. Our IQ is not that high. But no, it's the idea of where are you? What's your passion? What are you most passionate about and good at? You can't be, you know, you have to find the balance there. And then what does the world need?
Yeah.
At that intersection is your purpose. It's being used by God to serve humanity in a way that is in line with your passion and what comes natural to you. So that's why I love the whole, yeah, you agree. Yeah. It's like,
I do agree.
Double down on your strengths. The world's going to get changed by you stepping into that, not trying to get better at text messaging or, you know, some of the stuff that we're not naturally maybe gifted at, if that makes sense.
I mean, it's like when the lineup card got written out every day, the game was going to be played. I could choose to walk out and take my spot at second base and hit or not, you know? So God's going to be moving every day. Do we want to be a part of it and enjoy it and see the fruits of it, or we can sit on the sidelines? And
How do we step into the game of life more?
Well, I do think you have to be intentional. Intentionality is huge. I mean, if you are walking through your day and your life without having any intentionality, whether that's written down on paper or whether that's something that you can feel in your just deep inside of you, that I know I should be doing this, and or I, this is where I'm being led, but I just don't go do it. A lot of why we don't do things is fear-based, right? And that is not from God. Mm. God is not a God of fear.
Yes.
So if I choose not to listen to the prompting of God, what my talents are, my abilities are, usually it's fear-based. So it's either fear that I am leaving something behind that I shouldn't leave behind, I feel like I shouldn't leave behind, or I'm stepping into something that I don't know what it's going to produce. And all of those things will lead you to inactivity. They have in my life plenty of times. I have listened to the voice of fear way too many times. But when I have stepped into some of those fears, right, because I knew that that was where I was supposed to be going, and it may even mean that something else loses out, that's the tough part. So, like, for example, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, when our group of four guys who had been meeting for 6 years together, I felt the prompting in some ways. So the other guys too, but I think they still say it was the Lord had laid it on my heart.
Like, I've heard that too. It was you.
That, and that was only because I had seen somebody else do it. But like, I felt like we needed to open that group of four guys as much as we wanted to hold on tight to it, because I had heard so many guys needed it. Everybody's like, oh man, so is there something, can I come? You know? And so when we opened that up, even though there was fear in there, because what's that going to lead to? Are we going to lose out on what we had and this and that? But here we, you know, we went from four guys to 150 guys, 160 guys. In November, we'll have 300 people in our backyard, all because we were, all four of us were willing to say, I don't know what it leads to, you know, but I know that this is what we're supposed to do. And it may even, it might even be harder, but that's okay. You know?
So you actively, you chose, like, choose your heart. You said, this is something I feel that I need to obey in and take the step in, and it's producing fruit, and that doesn't come without pain or doesn't come without friction, but it is for the best. Yes. And I'm a testimony to that, dude. There's so many people, like you said, 150 to 300 at your house.
Well, last November we had 250. I'm sure we'll have more than that this year.
I know. Crazy, dude. It's it's amazing. Like, yeah, that's incredible to see the fruit. Real quick. This story I think is really impactful. I've said it before, and you were the one who kind of opened my eyes to this metaphor for life, right? I was in your guest house. I'm working for Pfizer. I'm also taking calls in between, you know, and after work, I'm like figuring out the balance there. And I had this real passion and I think call on my life to get out of pharma and to go pursue my passion for health, wellness, holistic approach, physical, mental, spiritual fitness, community, right? You name it. I felt like Pfizer was holding me back. Now, I will say this, you can maximize on your strengths and be in God's will wherever you are.
Absolutely.
You don't need to, I could have stayed with Pfizer for 40 years.
Agreed.
Even though I didn't need to be with, I would retire sooner than that. You can, that's God's plan for your life.
Absolutely.
Right? So I think that should be said, because not everyone needs to jump and do something else.
Nope.
In fact, that's a lot of times, I think what holds us back is we're just constantly jumping where it's like, yeah, this isn't it, but that's it. Oh, that turns out that's not really it. When all the while, it's all been about your head and your heart the whole time.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm sitting down. I'm like, you're a guy I went to for advice with marriage, with career, with mindset, the whole nine. And so I grew up thinking that if there's three doors in front of me, that A, B, or C, one of them is God's plan for my life, God's will. And I'm like, so Brian, how do you, like, B, I'm trying to figure this out. I'm stressed. I'm worried. Like, how do, if I pick A and it turns out God's plan is B and that's his best, I just missed out on everything. So, like, I'm scared to go through any of the doors.
It was fear?
Paralysis by analysis.
Was that?
It was fear-based, you mean? Dude, exactly. Exactly. And what you did, which changed the way I saw it and changed the way I live because of that, you said, dude, if it's door A, B, or C, all of those doors in front of you are God's plan for your life. If you are walking in trust and faith, knowing like he's with you, he's got your back. Because if there's a door in front of you that he doesn't want you to walk through, it's going to be locked. You can't open it. And that changed my life, dude, because I was so worried about picking the wrong door, paralysis by analysis, fear of a good thing. Like, oh, what if I let God down?
Yeah.
But how silly is that in hindsight to me now? Because now I tell people that advice all the time. Dude, the doors don't matter as much as your head and your heart. Are you trusting God? Mm-hmm. Are you stepping in faith? Mm-hmm. Are you saying, this is what I feel? I'm divinely guided. This is my door. If it's not, God's got something else, something better.
Yep.
But the inaction, dude, I'm tired of doing that. I'm tired of not acting. I'm tired of not taking action.
Yeah.
So in my life now, I mean, Gigi's been really teaching me that. Like, yo, what are you working on? The real stuff, work on important stuff, take action, take risk, go achieve with the balance of what we talked about earlier, position.
Well, I think with perspective of, are we doing it for selfish gain, right? From my standpoint, like, and I know the world generally works in a slightly different way. But from what the place that I try to live from is, if I know that I'm not going into it with like purely selfish gain motives, right? That, okay, I'm going in this honestly to give myself away. You know, I'm giving my time to other people. I'm giving my talents to other people. I'm giving my treasures to other people. I'm not going in it to just get,
yeah,
right? I'm going in it because I want to glorify God in what I do. Then how can you really fail in it? If you picked A, B, or C.
Exactly.
Because it's like you were saying, even if you'd have stayed at Pfizer, would you really have failed in it?
Yeah.
No, because you would have worked at it with all your heart,
yeah,
as working for the Lord, not for men.
It'd be a failure if I stayed there when I knew there was a call and I said no to it out of fear.
Absolutely.
But if there's no call and you're like, no, this is, I feel like this is where God has me, and I'm going to be excellent at my craft, I'm going to excel, I'm going to achieve, I'm going to get really good at what I do, that's exactly what God had for me. So that's a great point.
And you knew more and more where you should go because you were living in with other people who were speaking into your life.
Facts.
So you're laying it out to people. You're asking for, hey, I need your honest opinion. I need, this is what I'm thinking. This is what I'm feeling. This is where I see this going. Now, I don't have it all figured out for sure. Mm-hmm. And people are then telling you, go or stay, right? And in some ways, in most ways, I believe God speaks to us through other people, mm-hmm, most often, mm-hmm, nowadays, you know? And so when you're getting good advice from people, and you got it from many people, and that's the thing. So a lot of times we're scared because we're on an island, and now we're trying to do this in our own head, thinking now we're battling, should I do this? Should I not do it? But you have nobody there to help you, mm-hmm, figure out if this is really your calling or not.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, what do you do when there's contradictory voices that contradict?
Yeah.
I'm thinking you and let's say Urban gave me very contradicting messages, and two guys I highly respect. Mm-hmm. Urban's like, you're a silly goofball. If you walk away from that job because that's paying bills, it's safe. Like, that's dumb. So how do you make the right decision? How do you find that guidance that's actually what's most in alignment versus like the noise? Because the world's never been noisier with information.
Yeah. Well, I think number one, you never ever listen to your father-in-law for anything. You know, I love Urban more than anything.
That's the only time he's been wrong.
I know, exactly.
He's giving me
He's the best, dude. Mm-hmm. That is an incredible question. And I would say in your case, and every case is certainly different. There's no two cases that are alike. I think deep down in your soul, you did not feel like that was your calling for the next 30 years. So that was a big piece of it to begin with.
Big.
The second one was, okay, where are these people coming from in how they're looking at things, right? Mm-hmm. Now, generally, I'm very much a realist of like, hey, where's the next paycheck going to come from, right? And that was where Urban was coming from, was a money standpoint.
Sure.
I wasn't coming at this from a money standpoint this time, you know, and I don't think that a lot of times we should come at it from a money standpoint in most ways, because if we're, you know, if we're really honest and realistic in our society, we have very warped ideas of how much money we need, mm-hmm, right? I have friends that have five boys that have lived off of probably less than $50,000 a year with no debt for the last 15 years that I've known them. So it's really about what do we need? Mm. What do we spend versus, you know, well, our lifestyle calls that we need this much money, you know, and it's like, well, if that's the case, then maybe you should stay where you are.
Yeah.
And so if you go into it saying, look, I don't know exactly where the money is going to come from for sure, but you already had a base too. You know, you weren't starting from scratch. Mm. And so I think what you gathered was from a couple different voices was, okay, if I don't go, it's from a fear of God not providing financially for me and my family.
Sure.
And I don't think you believed into that lie. I believe that you knew that God would provide. Yeah. Now, what that looked like, it didn't say that he would provide billions of dollars, but right. he would provide your daily bread, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And then go from there. And so I think that that's more importantly is when you're getting advice, the advice needs to align with your heart and where you're going with it, mm-hmm. right? So now he may have been right if he had said, hey, like, financially tomorrow, I don't think you should make this decision.
Yeah.
But if it was, hey, if you're okay for the next year or two, and if it doesn't work out, then you go back to something else, then great.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how we said it. Was like, yeah. dude, why not? What's the worst thing that happened? Gigi was working at the time. You know, all these mm-hmm. things, like, go for it.
Yeah.
And so I think just make sure you know advice-wise where you're lining up with.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, dude, I appreciate you so much for like that specific moment in my life and others. It is crazy, like the people we surround ourselves with and how important it is, how pivotal it is to our trajectory, our life, you know, advice from someone, you know.
Dude, I remember you getting ready to hand that car back into Pfizer, and you were like, dude, I don't know what I am going to do, you know. But you knew God had, yeah. this was where God was leading you.
I mean,
and dude. No matter what the fear is, here you are. And like, I walk in your studio, I'm like, man, the Lord provides. Like, not that you have to be rich for the Lord to provide by any means, but the Lord has given you life and passion and influence in amazing ways.
Dude, amen. Praise God. God is great. And to live in a scarcity mindset scared the crap out of me. Like there's one affirmation, there's one truth I try to speak over my life all the time. It's I wake up and God, you are my supply. I lack nothing.
Mm, so good.
Infinite yeah. supply is yeah. available. Does that mean, you know, that comes in the channel of money all the time? Not necessarily.
No.
But it could be, or it could be energy. It could be wisdom. Like God is my mm-hmm. supply. That job was never my true supply. Mm-hmm. And neither if
it was at the real, time.
Right.
The Lord supplied you with it then.
Right.
You know, and when we look back, sometimes all of those were just the Lord's provision at yeah. the time.
Yeah.
And that provision looks vastly different over the course of your lifetime.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. But I think the mistake is thinking that specific channel is the source.
Yeah.
But that's a channel, not the actual source. Source is God. And it's like, he's going to work, God's going to work through different channels.
I heard a pastor not long ago say the exact same thing. And he was saying, you don't run to this as, don't run to that. You don't even run to your spouse as the source. They are just a resource. And I was like,
oh yeah, oh,
they are not the actual source.
Yeah.
And you know what? So often we run to things as though they are the source. We run to our work like they are the source of our identity. Mm. They are the source of our, of who we actually are, how we feel about ourselves. Or we run to our spouse, or we run to our kids and how they're doing and their performance as our source of how we feel about ourselves. Mm-hmm. No, like God is the source of who we are. And he says we are loved, we are children of that, we are provided for. Like, and so that's where we get really jacked up. It's like mm-hmm. when, that was a great statement though. I'm just like, we run to the wrong things to be our source.
Yeah, and we trust in those things. Yeah. And to that point, if the channel breaks down, we lose our faith in God. It's like, well, you had it wrong. Thinking that was the actual source. So I love that.
Yeah.
Really quick before, because the business I really want to get to, mm-hmm. Josh and I talked briefly this morning about really this balance between relationships and time and our focus. And, you know, it's like we're in a state, as I'm sure you are, with you have freedom to work on different things. You have freedom to spend time here and there. And so wisdom is huge to mm-hmm. know what's right, what's the priority, what's worth putting your time and energy into. But we were just thinking, like, he met with Dustin, right? And that meeting gave him so much life. It was really soul. It was good for the soul.
Right.
And but on paper, it's like logistically speaking, that took away from his work,
yeah.
which took away from his kid, which took away from his family. So it's like, and everyone I think would be, everyone if we're honest would say, yeah, I know that when I look back on my life, I wish I spent more time with my kids yeah. and my family. But is that like, how do you find the balance? Because he could have spent more sure. time with the family, but he just met with a brother
yep.
who gave him a great conversation, good thoughts, good mm-hmm. thought-provoking things, which then full circle, he takes more presence maybe back to the family.
Absolutely.
So how do you balance that, dude? Like you're retired, but your hands are in a lot of different things. You're doing charity work, which we can touch on. How do you approach that idea, and maybe how do you do it guilt-free?
Well, I think you just summed it up, is realizing that it's not wasted time when we spend our time wisely with someone else.
Intentional.
Yeah. Who we're with.
Like you said.
And that is part of the intentionality. I mean, my wife and I walk the beach usually towards the end of the year, and we will go over relationships in our lives, and we'll say, okay, we know that there's only so much capacity.
Yeah.
Right? There's a lot of books out there on how many close friends you can actually have or whatever, right? And we'll look at it and say, okay, who are the five people that we feel like we need to be in community with, because they give us life. Mm-hmm. They're life-giving relationships. They feel like we build them up. We feel like they build us up, right? They fill our cup so that we can then pour that cup out. Mm-hmm. And then who are some of the relationships that they are actually, in some ways, and this sounds terrible, but like they're harder. They drain more energy from you, but you feel like God is calling you to be in their life for certain reasons.
Choosing that suffering.
Yes.
For lack of a better word.
Yeah, suffering. Yeah. And because they're not.
Choosing
it's
the
not
friction.
Suffering, but it's just like, man, it's not as easy as some other ones, right?
Yep.
And I could choose to spend all of my time with those five, mm-hmm. right? And just live in my little bubbly hot tub of like perfect relationships.
Yep.
Or we can use those to go out and be a part of those other relationships that maybe don't come as easy, or we're trying to help in some way or whatever. And then we have, so those are like just like couples relationships, and you've got your individual relationships in those same ways. And you've got, and so man, you can get dragged in a lot of different ways, but there is intentionality to it. And knowing like, if we don't do that, then now we can be drawn in all these different places. And sometimes it means saying no, it does. But a lot of times it means saying yes, because of, take Josh's, for your example with Josh, like it's easy for the fear factor in some ways of like, okay, my wife's going to be upset at me. I'm spending an hour where I could be at home. I got this guilt factor about my kids and this mm-hmm. and that. And then I come home though, and what they realize is, man, I just got poured into. I just had life built into me. And now I come home a better husband, better father. And I wrestled with that a lot, I will be honest.
Yeah.
Even like what I'm in this morning, it took a little bit for me to commit to that, because we homeschool two kids at home. Our third little one goes to preschool right now. You know, he has to be dropped off at 8:30. The other ones are starting school. And I'm like, babe, 7:45, I'm out for a while, you know? And I wrestled with that a lot. Am I giving my time in the right place? But man, it's so life-giving, you know? And my wife is, thank goodness, sells, you know, signs off on it. Doesn't mean it doesn't make it harder for her. And so I think that's where you realize, like, is where I'm going to go spend that time, is it going to be beneficial in the end? And it may cause a little friction here and there on other ends, but that's the beauty of it, is that those relationships in the end make you better at where you may even have a little friction because of it.
Boom. I love that, dude. The intentionality and the purpose that you're trying to give and receive, and like the value you're trying to give and receive in those moments, is everything. And that makes you a better man. I love that, dude. How much of your time is spent on making money, or from a business standpoint? You're retired. I'm just curious from my standpoint as a dad, and money, financials, building wealth is a part of life. I mean, that's mm-hmm. a huge part of life, because it does create freedom. It's not the only thing, right? It certainly is not the most important thing, but it is real. So do you spend time on that? Do you have people for that? How do you approach like wealth management and building?
Well, don't
wealth?
Forget that you said it builds freedom. Sometimes it builds bondage.
That's fair.
So
have you experienced that in your life?
Oh, I think money can easily cause bondage, for sure.
How so?
Well, for one, let's just think about it. So generally speaking, when people make, as your salary increases, as the income increases, what happens to expenses usually?
They rise.
Of course they do, mm-hmm. right? We don't keep the same lifestyle, unfortunately, a lot of people. So once that lifestyle keeps creeping, then what happens?
Pressure to make more.
Of course. So when the pressure adds up, then that means I have to spend more time where?
Working.
Uh-huh. And then, so it becomes this vicious cycle. We call it the hamster wheel. Like the more that goes out, the more that has to come in, which means the more time I have to spend creating that time to make that money come in. And so, yeah, I don't always think that money creates freedom at all. I think it creates a lot of bondage at times. In some ways, obviously, I'm fortunate that I made most of my money in a shorter period of time. But it also means that you have to be good steward of it. Because there's a lot of people that made the same amount of money that I did over a short period of time, but they have to work because they didn't keep track.
I mean, dude, how many athletes go broke?
Right. Just, a lot. A ton.
Crazy high.
A ton. And so for me, finances still boil down to more needs to be coming in than going out. Mm-hmm. Always.
That's good.
It's, you know, I mean, as best as you possibly can make that work, which I do think that most Americans could make that work.
Yeah.
They just don't a lot of times.
Right. Because it's about taking out the essential or taking out the non-essentials.
Exactly.
Which frees up. Hard. It creates money. It creates money in that sense.
People don't want to, they think they're missing out, or they think it's even almost a right or an entitlement to do those things.
Like every citizen should have a Netflix account.
Exactly. Or a vacation twice a year or overseas or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, that's true.
And this isn't to bash anything. It's just, it is the reality of like, man, if you can always manage to keep more coming in than going out, then you're going to be in pretty good shape
for sure
over the long run. Business-wise now, like most of business I do now is based on what we've been talking about the whole time, is I find my passions and where I think God is working and moving. And so my financial advisor, who I absolutely cannot ever speak highly enough about, because we align in the fact that, for one, we realize that we want to give out really more than we actually spend. Like I want to be giving more than anything. Because we all know, like, the one more thing that we purchased never fulfills us.
Sure.
But man, when we give it out, it actually is way more fulfilling. So we're very big on like our tithing and giving out and joining where God is moving all over, whether it's here locally or around the world or whatever it is. But when it comes to continuing, I do think there's a responsibility with what God's been, what he's given me though, to continue to create and not, you know, biblically speaking, you don't just bury it in the dirt, right? Because that person got scolded almost for burying it in the dirt.
Right.
So we have a responsibility to continue to grow that. And so we do it, generally speaking, very relatively conservatively within just investing. And we try to live off of what it comes in from investing. And then we will side business a handful at a time, maybe, that we feel like align with our passions a lot of times, or with people that we believe in. So for us, and business wise, we either invest in things that we believe in, that we know, like baseball stuff, or sports, some sports stuff here and there, or different things that have all panned out pretty well, thank goodness. And then we've also invested with people, and because we believe in the people and their passions, and those have all generally worked out relatively well too. So it's more the couple that we have had that didn't work out very well were random things that I'm like, I had no passion in that. I didn't even really know the people that well. I got, you know, I knew the people some, but it all sounded great. And then those were the ones that don't seem to work out, ironically.
Yeah. You felt like obligated to do that?
No, it's people who, you know, I think, for one, they weren't business people. Two, they got sold a bill of goods by people who, you know, were really good at salespeople.
Sure.
Well, then they sell it to you. And my financial advisor is great. Like, he honestly probably would have told you all along, like, I didn't agree with either of them, but I told you to put a smaller amount in because I didn't like either of them, but I knew you kind of wanted to. So sometimes you got to learn those lessons. And and so fortunately, he didn't ever allow me to put a lot into those, actually. The ones that we put the most into seemed to work because I probably knew that those were going to.
Right,
he has very good discernment and wisdom in these things.
Dang, dude, this guy
and
seems
so
like a
pretty surrounding magic. Yourself with people who, you know, have wisdom and discernment in business, but more importantly, like, man, I believe it's follow your passions and follow people that you believe are for one, it's their main priority, right? So like the couple individuals we invested in, like, it was their livelihood too. And like they were going to work at it. They were not going to like sit on the sidelines because this was their livelihood.
So you invested into them because you saw that.
Invested into their business because their business. Was their business that they had started from scratch, and they were going to, you know, not that any of us can just force it to succeed, but like, you know what I mean? It was their bread on the table too.
Yeah. So there's that.
It was skin in the game for them, you know?
Yeah. The urgency and desperation.
Yeah.
What, is that more fulfilling to like those sorts of stories or those investments, let's say, versus like the standard, kind of like
have stock your market portfolio.
What's that? Yeah.
Stock market portfolio type of stuff.
Yeah.
Are they more fulfilling? They're higher risk.
Yeah.
They're always higher risk.
Yeah.
So are they more fulfilling?
When it pays off, I guess.
Sure. When it pays off because you hit bigger, quicker. Right. So you might invest and be in and out in 3 years or 5 years or 7 years. Whereas most people, I believe, and this is what I think Warren Buffett said, I think it was Warren Buffett, if you were going to start trying to take care of your money, buy an S&P 500 stock fund and leave it.
Hmm.
And so that's what I've taught my kids. They invested. I've made them take some of their money. Our financial advisor sat with us and they bought into an S&P 500 account. And they put some money in, and man, they learned the quickest lessons I've ever seen. So last year they put it in, it took off, right? This was in the fall of last year, summer, and it took off. And they were like, dude, investing's amazing. And then about around the new year, the market just tanked.
Mm-hmm.
And they were down like crazy. And they're like, what in the world? And now they're up more than they were a year ago when it took off. And I said, buddy, so this is the lesson that a lot of people never learn is that they will think that investing is a good idea and then it starts to go down and they panic and they pull it back out and that sort of stuff. So I think for a majority of people who are just working your usual job and you're making a steady amount of income, learn to spend less than you make, put money aside and start investing. Even if you just do something like that, and leave it. You will not lose over time.
Yeah.
You will not. And that is the one lesson that my financial advisor, we put it in 20 years ago and I've never touched it and don't look at it. And it's gone up and up and up and up.
Huge. It's the same financial guy that you've had for 20 years?
Day one.
Yeah. What do you think is his best characteristic or attribute? Like what's his superpower, let's say?
That he doesn't care about money.
That's great. How do you know that?
It's an odd thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He's an expert in
because something. He doesn't go chasing clients for one.
Yeah.
He walks with the Lord. He wants to give his money away. He wants me to give my money away. So like generally speaking, money managers make more money the more they have under asset.
Yeah.
But at the end of the year, he's like, how much are we giving away?
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, so that's money out of his pocket.
Yeah.
And so I know he doesn't care about money.
Love that.
And so the more you love money or care about money, then generally speaking, the more bad things happen usually.
So, I don't disagree. What advice would you give someone who, cause you're on the other side of that. I think you're on the other side of that where, dude, you got so much wisdom because like you said, you made so much money in a short amount of time. And now it's about wisdom and less about like hard freaking grit work. Right. Mm-hmm. But what advice would you give someone who's maybe in that place of like, I really want to make more. I want to provide more for my family. Mm-hmm. That, like, put yourself in their shoes. Like, what would if they kind of thought or if this clicked? It would really help them have a healthy approach in a very godlike approach to creating more wealth.
Obviously, when I was playing baseball, I didn't just play to have a stat. Like, I knew I needed to provide a living, and I wanted to have a big contract. I'm not saying I didn't, like, you know, who doesn't want to, because generally speaking, for one, it means you were good at what you're doing. So that's usually the reward is the money comes after you are good at something that you're doing. Right.
Which side note, not to butt in, but the conversation I had with Josh around this conversation as we prepared is like, that's what's really fascinating is you weren't chasing a buck. You weren't chasing a million. It was like, I'm going to be excellent at my craft, knowing it's going to pay off. But that was your sole focus.
Of course.
So the money and the wealth creation was a byproduct of you saying, I'm going to be excellent with my craft, which is really cool.
And to be honest with you, I mean, the way I look at it is that I think that, you know, all the money in the world is God's, and he is just entrusting me with it anyways. And I could have worked my tail off just like everybody else in Major League Baseball did or minor league baseball. There were guys that were more talented than me. Mm-hmm. There were guys that worked harder than me, I'm sure. There were guys that, you know, like, so I'm not going to sit here and take credit for all of it and say like, oh, it's because I did this, this is because sometimes we do this, this is this, and it doesn't lead to that. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
However, I would say that if that's your goal and that's what you're trying to do, generally speaking, you're right. It boils down to, okay, how am I accountable for what I'm doing and how do I do it extremely well?
Yeah.
And that means you have to have some processes in place, for one, right? So like for me, I was like, admit I had to go in the off season and train twice a day, 5 days a week, mm-hmm. and I needed to be doing what I was supposed to be doing, and I had to hit, and I had to do those things. And so for business-wise, it's the same process, right? Mm. But at the same time, as an athlete, you can't just go and work at it 24 hours a day. There has to be some balance, right? You mm-hmm. have to rest, you have to recover, you have to do all these things. And I think that a lot of times, the tough part is that a lot of people do this, they grind and they grind and they put all this time and they finally acquire some wealth, and yet they do it at the cost of their family.
Yeah.
They do it at the cost of their kid. They do it at the cost of divorce. They do it at the cost of whatever it is. And in the end, they realize, well, that wasn't worth it.
Mm.
So it's doing it with balance. Work at it with all your heart, as much as you can, with balance.
Yeah.
And I think that then it never leads, it never guarantees that you're going to make millions of dollars.
Yeah.
But at least you know you have done it well. Because to me, it's just about doing it well more than anything.
Yeah.
And whatever you're making, who cares? We worry so much about what other people think.
Mm-hmm.
We worry so much about keeping up with the next person. When if you ask that person who's super wealthy, they most of them would be like, you can have it all, dude. It's not that great. Mm-hmm. Here, you know? Take the Gucci shoes if you really want them.
Yeah.
They're just a pair of tennis shoes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So true.
They're no different than I could go to Target and buy the same pair and I wouldn't really care.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's a good point. Like the perception from others is, it plays such a big role in that. Cause to your point, it's the same silhouette. It's the same shape. It's the same like practical solution to shoes, which I'm not a fan of shoes. I walk around barefoot anyway.
Exactly. Or shirts or anything else. Like, I mean,
minimal
clothes are optional, right?
My stance is I came into the world naked. I want to stay as close to that as possible. Just stay as natural as possible. And then I'll be on the way
out. But this has to do with what we talk about all the time. Is like, I think you have to define success.
Yeah.
And so if money is success to you, then go chase it. And you don't know what the cost of that will be. And so defining success is really the more important thing.
Mm.
Is laying on your deathbed with your children sitting at your side saying, man, dad, I love you so much. You were a great dad. Mm. Your wife standing beside you going, I could have never asked for a better husband.
Wow.
Your friends, a whole heap of friends standing around you saying, man, you've impacted my life so much.
Mm.
Or do you want a really nice robe on with nobody beside your bed? You know, because not to say that money means you don't have anybody beside your bed, but depending on how you go about trying to get it,
right,
can mean that.
Right.
And that's not success.
So what is success to you?
I mean, a lot of what I just said, right? And just my take on it. It's not certainly not the worldly take on it a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke at a thing a couple of weeks ago and I looked up what some worldly or definition of success. And Webster's was like, you know, it means achieving something that you were going for, that sort of thing. And I think it was Tony Robbins, one of his was, success is doing what you want, when you want, how you want, with who you want, however many times you want.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
Tony.
Wow. Okay. and that's not exactly how I see success.
Yeah.
You know, to me, success really and truly is at the end of your life, when you're laying on that deathbed, which we will all face. For one, do I know where I stand with my creator? Two, where are the closest people in my life? Are they by my bedside?
Hmm.
Like, is my wife there? Are my children there?
Mm-hmm.
Are my closest friends there? Because how many billionaires have committed suicide, unfortunately? Money doesn't do it. It will never, ever equate to success, you know? And so I think personally, relationships are a massive definition of success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I would agree. From your standpoint though, it sounds like success is like the end of the line. So like, how do you live? Yeah. And how do you work backwards? How can you be successful now instead of just like, I'll measure my success by who's with me?
That's a great point. In business, most people work backwards, right? So if I want to get to here, where do I start?
Right.
Right. Okay. So if I want my wife sitting at my bedside, then what do I have to do? I have to be super intentional in the way that I care for her, in the way that I love her, in the way that I'm willing to sacrifice my own personal freedoms for hers.
Yeah.
Those sorts of things, right? But most of the time we're like, no, me first, you second.
Yeah.
And that creates bitterness, resentment, all sorts of things, right? If I want my kids sitting at my bedside, does it, most kids who are bitter at their parents, it all boiled down to performance. Hmm. I could never live up to what my dad thought I should be, is what a lot of people say. You know, like, no, let them know it's not about your performance, right? You are my child. I love you. Like, I am here for you. We must be patient. We must be kind. We must be gentle and tender. Mm-hmm. Friends, it means we have to give our time to our friends, yeah. Right? It means we have to sit with each other, must break bread together, like all of those things. Do I want to be successful in my business or whatever? Sure. Okay. What does that look like? Well, it means I have to work at it with, do it well. I believe that, like, especially Christians, like, should be the best at business.
Yeah.
So none of this is saying don't be good at business.
Yeah.
I think we should run the best businesses there are.
Facts.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
We should be amazing at it, mm-hmm. because we care about the other people,
right.
in the business.
Right.
We have friends that run amazing businesses. Josh, like, his business is thriving. Started painting by himself at 22 years old or whatever, mm-hmm. 19. He's got 45 employees, but his point is not to continue to make more money. His point is, I want my employees to be happy. I want them to feel taken care of.
Serve their families.
I want the people that we paint for to feel different, you know? So,
and
like,
and at the end of the day, he wants to get out to the woods and just move out there. Exactly, and just no phones, exactly, no calls, exactly. Nothing.
It's not to be on the, you know, traveling all over Europe.
Yeah.
So we are supposed to be great at what we do, but working backwards, I mean, that's just the way I see how we, that's how I am going to measure my success one day.
Yeah.
You know, and that means daily I have to take those steps to make that happen. Mm-hmm. And that's not, we don't always do well at that, but it also is understanding that we have to ask people for forgiveness. Sometimes say, I tanked it. I screwed up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I butchered it. Will you please forgive me?
I'm not perfect.
Exactly.
Newsflash. I thought you were.
I mean, most people think
he's pretty close. He's pretty close. I can't say that.
Two words never to use. Always and never.
That is truth. I've thought though for a good bit of time, because I like that.
I like that good bit of time.
For a good bit of time, I've thought this one thing to be true. But since leaving Pfizer and going out on this adventure of Be Fit and Live Elevated and all this stuff, what we're doing with Pathos and just this non-traditional lifestyle and career, I have thought ever since that moment that success is not so much a what, it's not a number, it's not an achievement. Mm-hmm. It is so much about how you live your life. Success is not a what, it's a how. You know, it's like, are you keeping the most important things front and center? Are you focused? Are you full of love? Are you trusting God? Are you being excellent in everything that's in front of you? You know, how are you approaching it? Does that achievement make you? Does it break you? What do people think about your success? Is that more important than how you go about it? Like, so success is so much more a how to me and not a what. And that's changed my paradigm, because I can be successful today. Absolutely. I can be successful right now. I don't need to wait until I have this number or that achievement. If I'm being the person God made me to be, and I'm taking steps to become more of that person, I'm growing in love, I'm growing in empathy for people, I'm standing up for what I believe in, that what else is success? Because if I'm excellent on top of that, money comes. And then there's the whole conversation of what do you do with that money, and how does success look like when you achieve money, which is very fascinating too, because you can, there's just a lot there.
Well, and if the target, if success is the what or the where you're going, that target always moves, bro.
Facts, yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Yep.
Like, if I started a company, it's like, man, when I hit $1 million in revenue, I will have succeeded.
Right.
Well, you hit $1 million, then what happens?
Mm-hmm.
So you
two,
so ten. Now as long as I stay at $1 million, I've succeeded? No. Mm-hmm. Now it's like I need to get to 3 and then 5 and then 10. So that target, if that is what is success, the target's always moving.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you ever feel any contentment when you're chasing a moving target?
Yeah, that's it.
Right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, if you're thinking the target that you hit is what's going to define you as successful, right. Then that's exhausting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. And then identity, I think that's one thing we share as believers. I think that pays. It just gives me so much value and so much, like, I think peace in the middle of all my achieving is that I'm not defined by, you know, how much I achieve or don't achieve. When I failed at baseball, You know, you failed eventually, but later than me. We all fail at, you know, eventually. We either have an expiration date or an injury or whatever it is. But when that failed and when I quit playing ball, I did start asking those questions like, who am I now? Mm-hmm. You know, where am I going to look to define Brian? Mm-hmm. Who is Brian? What do I measure my worth by? And for me, as a believer, I think my life as a believer is just, it's like I don't get to miss out on this revelation that I'm a child of God. Like, that's what I think is beautiful about it. It's like, I know who I am because I know what I'm made of. I know who created me. I know that that's what makes me me and not these roles I play or things that are external. Mm-hmm. So that's really important to me, like in my faith, and I think that just sets me up for more success if I keep that front and center. Like, I'm a child of God. This is who I am. Mm-hmm. None of that stuff makes or breaks me, and so that does free me up to be excellent and work from a place.
Well, it also frees you up in struggles and trials, which we all. So in success, it frees us up, or when we're doing well, it frees us up to realize still we're not in. That's not who defines us, but man, I think, and like you said, it's almost greater in the struggle.
Speak on that.
Well, just this past week.
Yeah, because we're not getting out of suffering. Suffering is a part of life, right? So how do you suffer well? Yeah,
and suffering comes in a lot of different ways. There's no doubt. Like, you know, there's a suffering of like brain tumor that you had nothing to do with. Yeah. Like, right? That is just things that happen in our fallen, broken world, that disease and sickness and all these things.
Yeah. There's also suffering that we proactively, that's unnecessary, but that we say, oh, I need to suffer, so I'm going to take that upon myself, in a sense.
Yes.
But yeah.
There's suffering that is brought on that way. There's suffering that other people have caused us, right? And then there's suffering that we bring upon ourselves at times.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, like just this past week, I walked through that a lot. I was calling games in Toronto, and I made a statement during the game that I really didn't mean to be like offensive or harmful towards anyone. And I obviously realize more even now, probably, that I understand why people took it that way. It was not ever my intent whatsoever. And I have wrestled through it a lot, and I've had a lot of people send things at me and say things towards me, that have made me question my own identity at times and like really wrestle hard with like, man, am I defined by what these other people think about me, even though I know my intent was not the way they took it or it came across? And that's been, but I have to go back. If I don't have like my faith as my identity, then I do get, it's very easy to fall into that dark whole of, man, I am defined now by what everyone else says about me or what somebody who doesn't even know me is, I'm allowing them to define me.
Right.
I've literally never been in the presence of this person, and I'm now allowing them to define me by what they have said about me.
Mm.
And it's an easy place for us to go, but I have to realize, no, like I am not defined that way. You know, I make mistakes, obviously, like we all do. And thank goodness, like God is gracious to me in that. And that's where I have to land. And that's the only thing that gives us peace in those times of those struggles, whether it's a brain tumor, you know, like we were just listening. I mean, a guy I was sitting with this morning had a brain tumor taken out, a couple years ago, and he thought that he was going to die. Like, and he walked through that suffering and that struggle, and it came out on the other side, a different human being because of it. And we all come out different, but how are we going to come out different? You know, are we going to come out different because we're bitter and we're up, you know, now, okay, well now it's, I'm going to get revenge on everyone or whatever, or do we come out at peace with who we are as a child of God?
More human, come out more human.
Absolutely. With more grace, even towards other people when they fail and screw up.
Goodness gracious, man. Like Christ's last words, forgive them for they didn't know not what they do. Like, that's crazy. That's insane. Like, that is grace and mercy and love being expressed. What is someone who's in suffering or in a dark place, what do they need most? Is it a word? Is it like advice? Is it something else, like what would you say that that person who's struggling, and you can speak from your own experience too, like what do we need most as humans when we're suffering?
I think that's a tough question, because I can say that in different instances of either other people suffering. So take, for example, one of my closest friends, his 15-year-old son died instantly, tragic accident. And I was one of the first people in the couple hours afterwards to see him and his wife. And they said, honestly, the best thing you ever did was just hold us and not say anything, you know? And because what do you say, right? What do you say? I mean, I have a 12-year-old now, so I'm getting pretty close. I don't know what anybody could say to me in that moment do. So I think sometimes people just need you to be there.
Yeah.
Right. And just be present, as we talk about. This is what we talk about. It's like, but if you don't have those relationships, if you're not in somebody's life, how are you going to be present for them at those times? And then there's other times where people actually might tangibly need something. They're suffering. Maybe they can't keep the light bill on and they actually might need you to pay their light bill.
Right.
You know? So suffering comes in so many different forms that I think in more than anything, you have to be present to know and hopefully in tune with God that you know like what to give at that moment. And it doesn't mean we're always going to be great at it. We may, as long as we're trying to be there, sometimes we might even screw up in those moments, and that's okay too.
Totally.
You know, I don't think even if I would have said something to my close friends who lost their son, they would have held it against me forever in that moment. You know? So I think it all depends on the kind of suffering people are going through. Yeah. When I was in my darkest place with my concussion, honestly, I didn't need somebody to tell me it was going to be all right because they didn't know it was going to be all right.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was going to be all right.
Yeah.
I had a buddy that did just come and just be there and just watch TV with me or something, you know, and just sit there. So.
Wow. That's powerful, man. Yeah. I resonate with that big time because I'm a talker.
Yeah. We always want to have the answer.
Yeah. And I think, and I'm an encourager.
Yeah. And it's not a bad thing.
Yeah. So it's, but that's not always the answer. A word of encouragement or a word of advice is not always the best thing that you can give someone. Mm-hmm. So I love that answer because it could be a practical gift. Like, here's a financial gift. Here is me connecting you with someone. Here's me just being with you. You know, I think about my journey as a believer. It's as a Christ follower. So much of life is about presence, like being with God. Like God, you know, as we understand, God is everywhere. So when we say like, God, you know, be with me now, it's like, God's with you. You're just inviting God to where God already is. So, but like, I just think I'd be, how much better would I be as a husband, as a father, as a friend, as a businessman or entrepreneur, if I just like, was just with God all day. Like I just recognize the presence.
Yeah.
Recognize the presence and just be with him, which this is powerful. Jason Riley, I shared it somewhere. I'm always like looking for inspiration and share it online or whatever outlet. Maybe it was Team Vitality. I was talking in a voiceover, but Jason Riley Friday morning, he was saying that he woke up the day before just from the jump, like got to get to work. He went to work, poured a lot of time and energy into this. He's starting a new kind of business venture here. So he's doing this. Worked all the way to 5 or 6. He's like, shoot, I gotta eat dinner. Picks up dinner, goes back to the office, eats dinner, comes home. And I think his son was just about to go to bed. And he got home and he saw his boy and he was with him. And he kind of like broke down because he was like, I haven't been a dad all day. I haven't been a dad at all today. And he was like fighting back tears, telling it. So I know the emotion that was tied to it. And so he was like, that's the most important thing in my day. I get caught up in all these different things, but it's like, I never want to miss out on those moments. I was like, bro, Jason, you to even get to that place, you already know what's most important. So you to recognize that when so many men miss that moment for a decade and they try to find it after the fact, God bless you. Like you miss the moment, you don't get the moment back, which is why we got to take so much urgent presence into every moment. But then I said, oh my gosh, if Jason Riley, an incredible father and human, right, limited in his capacity for love, let's say, like, because if God's love, that's infinite love, right? But we're finite beings, we're eternal souls, eternal spirits, but like we have this finite experience of life. If he felt that for his kid, and that filled him, he said that 5 minutes holding his boy, that filled him up for like an eternity. It felt like, I said, if that felt like that to you, imagine what it feels like for God, for us, to just be his sons, mm-hmm. to be his daughters, just be with God. So I'm like, dude, that's crazy, because it's just you being with God. It's not like you trying to earn or trying to, you know, I guarantee you Jason wasn't like, I guarantee you he didn't want his son to like, oh, here's what I did. Aren't you proud of me, Dad? It's like, no, just be with me. Yeah, yeah. Like, let me just be with you.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man, prayer, presence, 100%. Like.
I boil it down a lot of like, a lot of times we, if you have a pizza pie and you've got 8 slices, mm-hmm. you've got your work slice. You got your family slice, you got your friend slice, you got your workout slice, and then you've got your God slice
yeah.
somewhere over there. And it's like, no, like, you've got a pizza pie, and in the center is this piece, this circle that's God. Mm-hmm. And then you've got 8 slices that all come off of that.
Yeah.
And it's like, God is in every single one of those slices,
yep.
right? And so just because we may not have like knocked it out of the park that day, in that one slice, mm-hmm. right? That God is still in that slice, mm-hmm. and he can redeem that slice immediately.
Yeah.
You know? And that's where not only can he redeem it, but if we can actually live where God is the center of all of those slices, right? So even when I'm going to work out, what am I working out for? Am I working out so I can look better in a mirror? Right? Is it selfish gain? Or is it, hey, like, God's given me this body, he calls it my temple, like, I want to take care of it, mm-hmm. but I'm not going to make it the God, mm-hmm. right? It's just a part of who I am and created to be. Here's my work. Like, it is a part of who I am, but mm-hmm. God is going to be at the center of that no matter what. And here's my family and all these things. And we so often, including myself, I'm speaking from personal experience, way too much personal experience, of just separating these things, right? Like, I am going to be a baseball player for these next 3 hours.
Yeah.
And it's going to be all about me and yeah. my performance. Mm. And I did that too many days. And you know what happened in those times? I would get angry. I would be defined by whether I was 0-for-4 or 2-for-4. I would come home and be a bad husband, whatever it was, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, man, when God was at the center of those, like the performance just didn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If I put the work in, like, yeah. he expects me to give my best effort. So yeah. it's not like, oh, well, whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, no, I prepared.
Yeah.
But then whatever does happen, does happen. Uh-huh. And when I do that, then I can glorify God, whether I was 0-for-4 or 2-for-4 or 4-for-4. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really matter. It's not like he gets glorified more because I hit 4 homers. In fact, a lot of times he gets glorified more when I'm a better teammate and I'm 0-for-4.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because everybody can be happy when they're 4-for-4.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
That's, and just like you said, the conversation you have with a teammate that you plant a seed of truth or brotherhood or whatever, that was most important in that day, let's say.
Well, it should have been. It wasn't always to me. It's a problem, you know? And that's hindsight. I wish I'd have been better at it.
Yeah.
And that's why I tell people these things. Like, I don't want you to make the same mistakes that I made. And that's why I think these conversations you're having are so important, because you're saying, talk to the 25-year-old. And man, if the 25-year-old, if somebody would have told me, hey, like, look, man, whatever your numbers are at the end, they are. You can't force it. You're not going to force it to make it any better. Mm-hmm. But what's your real purpose? Mm-hmm. What's your purpose of being here?
Yeah.
And I knew deep down what my purpose was, but it was super hard to live that out every day.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you didn't have somebody there walking it out with you.
Yeah.
And that's where I think as young people, you need people in your life to say, hey, like, where's your balance? Mm-hmm. Hey, like, why are you not getting home till 8 o'clock tonight?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Why are you, whatever it might be.
Keeping you accountable.
Yeah.
When you think about guys in your life and someone who wants this community, brotherhood, iron sharpening iron type of thing, like, we are stronger together. And Josh knows the quote. It's like, you want to go fast, go alone. You want to go far, go together. And I'm not sure, I am in a long-term perspective, longevity of life. So I don't want to just burn bright and be done. I want to have this longevity. And so I do value who I'm choosing to, like, allow in my life and spend time with and pour into and invest and get invested into. So, like, I've heard the idea of, you know, everyone, like a biblical metaphor, everyone needs a Paul, right? I think that's it. Like, mm-hmm. pouring into
Paul and
you
Timothy. Mm-hmm.
and Timothy. So where you're encouraging, mm-hmm. is there another, like, would you change that at all? How do you go about the men in your life?
Oh, no, yeah, I definitely think that's so true.
Yeah.
No, I say I didn't really have anybody, but, like, I would have been even worse than I was when I was playing, if it wasn't for my Paul, I had a pastor in Baltimore that just poured into me and poured into me, married my wife, and I still, to this day, now he's in his upper 70s, still, if I need a like lifeline, I still call him.
It's amazing.
And that's huge. And so, yeah, that was honestly my saving grace. I don't know where I would have ended up, honestly, if it wasn't for his accountability, if it wasn't for, and here's the most, when I say this, I think the greatest thing he ever gave me, the greatest gift he ever gave me was the fact that he was, you know, quite a bit older than I was and certainly 9 billion times wiser than I was. Easy. And 100 billion times more righteous than I was. But he was a million times more gracious than anyone ever should have been.
That's huge.
And like, man, there was no judgment, truly. Like, there was just love for me. Mm. Like,
that's Christ-like.
I would fail, and he would just be there. Yeah. You know? Mm-hmm. And now, don't get me wrong, he would give me some ways to, like, hopefully help me get better at those failings. And so, yes, do I continue to need that? Absolutely. And, you know, it doesn't always have to be necessarily somebody older than you. I think a lot of times it's great to have somebody that's been past where you are, just in age-wise, like in life circumstances and things. And then we should be passing that down, absolutely. And, you know, I will meet tomorrow morning with a guy who wants to do that. We do it every Thursday morning. And what we think is we're passing down, though, we also get so filled up by that other person. Like, everyone has so much to offer.
Yes.
That they come to you and say, hey, would you do this for me? And you're like, yeah, sure. And then in the end, you're like, I would never want to leave this relationship because it's been so life-giving for me, you know? Mm-hmm. And I know that's how my mentor felt, even though I didn't ever feel like that was the case, you know? He would probably tell you that now, which is kind of crazy to think, but I see how it works now because he did that for me first. And so, yes, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, I love that. The moral of the story is allow yourself to be seen, allow yourself to get close to other men who are on similar paths, similar missions, have the same spirit, like the same goals in life or priorities and all that. And I think that is invaluable. Like Bible study on Fridays, Pathos on Thursdays, for me for the past 2 years, completely changed my life. And now it's like, I want to do with the summits and events and, you know, these conference or day events, I want to do more of those and not just the summits because obviously summits very intense. It's 3 days, it's immersive, but it's like, I want to shake more hands. I want to meet more people and like, just allow people to feel that. Cause what I've felt is you can't, if you could bottle up what I feel throughout the week in community with who I have in my life and sell it, it would go crazy. You'd be a billionaire because that's what we need as humans, specifically as men, speaking as a man. Like that's why there's so much, I think, like of the negative stuff out. We don't have a place where guys can just feel safe and feel seen. And most important, like just have someone with you and not say all the right things. Maybe it is, but you just, you feel like, wow, I matter.
Yeah.
Like that's
absolutely.
And I'm here for a reason.
And that's what everyone wants to feel in the end, right? We want to feel like we matter in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we sit in a desk all day and where we do these things, a lot of times you don't really feel like you matter, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. I didn't sit at a desk, but even playing baseball, there were many days where I'm like, what's the point?
Yeah.
What difference does it make?
Yeah.
Does anybody really care? Does it matter in the grand scheme of things? It didn't feel like it a lot of days, you know? And I have way more purpose and now meeting on this morning with five guys tomorrow morning, Friday morning, like there's, I say that and people might think I'm kidding, but like, it's true. Like there's way more value and purpose to it. Not that I didn't know that I was called to play baseball because I was, but I also realized that I was missing out on some things that were, man, just as value, if not more.
Yeah. No, I love it, man. Your experience, the career, the baseball, you've gotten to experience so much of life in different ways and it's really been seasons of life, very much extreme for you because it wasn't like you're in a corporate job or you weren't doing this and that. Like you went, this was everything. You pursued excellence. Now it's a totally different season. But the way you go about your business, man, the way you lead your wife and your family, dude, it is so admirable. I commend you for being who you are, for honestly being willing.
Maybe you should interview my wife and kids first.
I should. Hey, is this really how it goes down? But just your humility, truthfully. Like when I asked you what your strength was, I jokingly said humility. But the truth is, dude, you're one of the more humble guys I know who don't need to be. Like, you have every reason not to be. But it's like, I freaking love that. And that's, you've inspired me on so many levels. I know you inspire people around you. So just wanted you to hear that and feel that, because every time I get a chance to sit down and talk and be with you and kick your butt in pickleball, whatever it may be, like, it's a chance to humble you, but also experience that humility. No, but
seriously. My financial advisor taught me one thing. He said, hey, one of the greatest things we can do is accept someone's compliment. And I used to always have like some comment proud. Back or like, you know, some snarky comment back. And it's like, he was like, just say I received that. And that's, and because we all, it's hard for us sometimes to hear those things, but it's life-giving to hear them.
Yeah.
You know, and we fight them off sometimes. But
why is that? You don't feel worthy.
Yeah.
You don't feel worthy.
I don't know. Something makes us uncomfortable when we hear it.
Wouldn't the world be a better place if we just chose to receive that, though?
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a recent thing for me. Like, you know, and now I'll tell somebody, I'm like, just receive it.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Just
receive like, it. It's a message from God, bro.
Yes.
Like, you are important. You matter.
Yes. Yes.
You know? And so, yeah, thank you.
That's what I was thinking real quick. The you matter. That's what I took from that last part, is like, how can I make Gigi feel that you matter? Mm-hmm. How can I make my clients or how my people I speak to that you matter? And that doesn't mean words. It could be that presence. It could be the hug.
Can I give you one piece of advice?
Please.
If Gigi is like most women, if you want her to feel like she matters, sit on the couch and just let her talk.
Yeah, or
and actually listen.
Yeah, dude.
That was actually what my buddy who lost his 15-year-old son, he said, dude, I was not a good husband for a very long time. Mm. And he said, since his son died, his whole life changed. But, and he said, man, I don't know what my problem was. Like, I didn't listen. I would never listen. Mm. Like, why she's even, you know, how she even still loves me, I don't know. But like, now I just sit and I just listen.
Wow.
Just let her talk.
Yeah.
And they literally have like a better marriage than I've ever seen. But it's like, man, how often do we just actually just sit and let our spouse like talk,
well, you know,
process
what?
Without having to even like, you know, solve
truth.
Anything.
Truth. You know what starts that though? It's a good question. Open-ended questions.
You are great at that.
Great at that. I feel like I'm not great
at that. Dude, are you kidding me?
I don't know.
Stop. Receive.
Yes. No, but even
I've learned so much from your questions.
That's
for real.
Great, man.
Straight up.
Praise God.
Straight up. And that is that is a wonderful like gift for people to learn.
Yeah.
Is how to just ask a question to somebody and just let them talk.
Yeah.
You know, because like you said, you say seen, heard. People want to be heard too, actually.
Mm-hmm. Understood.
You know, is a huge understood.
Thing. Yeah.
But if we won't sit long enough to let them talk, then they don't ever feel heard.
Yeah, man. That's a part of the journey for the podcast. Like, I've realized that with having more guests. I used to do solo episodes and guests one off. But I realized like, no, I want to meet more people, have more conversations with good buddies and friends and people I look up to. But that's been a whole journey of like I started wanting to ask all the right questions and like almost logistically on paper, like this would make for a good podcast episode. And then I would get so focused on the questions and not myself and like not just being with the person and kind of like free flowing. I'm like, oh, I can't go to that extreme. I also need to like make sure I'm not just floating in the clouds and we don't know where the heck we're going, to be fair. That's usually what I did. So I think that's why I really banked on this side. But I think that's what I've learned in this whole process is ask good questions. And honestly, simple questions are better. And the follow-up questions are huge, especially with the wife. Like, so what, how did they make you feel? That's the secret question.
Some wives would be like, dude, what is your name?
Yeah.
You know, you're not serious. Yes. You really want to hear how that makes me feel?
Yes, right.
And then you got to be able to receive how it made her feel. But if it's about you, but
facts. You know. Last thing. Dude, we've done an hour and a half. I love
it. Oh my God.
Thanks for being gracious for the time. You said the receiving. This is so good because I said this in Team Vitality because I saw it somewhere online where it's a Japanese, this idea, this Japanese saying, this wisdom saying, where it's basically like, okay, if someone gives you a gift, and they give it to you and you refuse to open it, whose gift is that? It's not yours. You haven't opened it, right? So if someone gives you a compliment, you can receive it and that becomes yours. You get to have life. But if someone has something nasty to say to you, they misjudge you because they heard you say something on TV, or they think they know you because of the single interaction, you can say, I actually don't accept that gift. Thank you for the gift, but I'm not going to accept it.
That's a great, great.
How good is that? It's like really healthy good. Boundary.
It's very good, because I had people kind of try to tell me that over the last couple of days, but that's said way better than just like, I'll just block it, you know? And it's like, but like to say like, hey, I just don't receive that. It's not truth. Yes. I'm not going to receive it. You know what I mean? And that you can save that gift for someone else. Or
and to be fair, that gift is a turd wrapped in a bow. And you're trying to give it to me as a gift. I can't even put
whipped cream on that and make it nice.
But that's also why you don't speak ill of people and speak negativity, because that's a gift you're giving. And if they refuse it, guess whose it is?
And they would say that that was kind of what I was doing, and that was not my intent whatsoever. Mm-hmm. You know, but that's, you know, it got misconstrued.
Well, I know the real Brian Robertson. He is nasty at pickleball.
We all make mistakes, is what I realize. And you know what? And so being gracious to each other, it would be is a wonderful thing in this world, and we each need more of it. I need more of it in my life from people, and I need to give it more to other people.
More grace, that's more a love.
Gift. Take that gift.
That's it. I will receive that. More grace, more love. Brian Roberts, love you, bro. Thanks for jumping on, man.
You're the man, bro. Thanks for having me.
Let's go. That's it, baby. That was.